Welcome everybody to the 7 AA meeting. My name is Tim and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org desperately in need will hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Larry D. will be speaking tonight, and he's come down from Gainesville, and he's a member of my Gainesville home group, the Fresh Air group, and he celebrated 5 years recently. And I remember when he first came in, primarily because he said, smile, it's not Monday. And he said that every time he shared for the last 5 years, and I couldn't resist having him come speak at the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speaker. So, smile. Larry's going to tell his story.
Hello, everybody. Let me step back. I'm Larry. I'm an alcoholic. Didn't plan on being one, but I am, so I had to deal with it. By the way, smile. Today is Monday. And if you like me, you love Monday, so tomorrow's going to be Monday, too. Every day I got to work for Monday. I told my story one time before. It was 4 years ago when I celebrated my 1 year. I told my story then, and I haven't told it since then. First thing I'm going to say is I didn't come in here to get sober. I came in here to keep my ass out of jail because the judge ordered me in here. A Miami judge, as a matter of fact. So I didn't come in here to get sober. I came in here to stay out of jail because I didn't want to go back to Miami's jail. I spent a year down there. I didn't want to go back. But things clicked. Anyway, I was born a long time ago. I'm one of them damn Yankees, I guess. I was born in Buffalo, New York. And up until I was 8 years old, I lived in Duluth, Minnesota. I don't remember a lot of my childhood then. I do know that my father was a merchant marine engineer, and he was gone 9 months out of the year on the Great Lakes. And my mom, only thing I remember about her is she died. It was cirrhosis of the liver and lung cancer. So I don't remember much about that part of my childhood. After we moved to Georgia, my dad sort of made a, it was supposed to be a business arrangement with my stepmom, who I call mom now, but back then I didn't, well, even when we came down, I started calling her mom for some reason, but I didn't have any problems growing up. I had a pretty good childhood. When I turned 16 is when I took my first drink. I was working at Shoney's in Oakwood, and on a Monday night, yep, it happened on Monday. I just dawned on me. It happened on Monday, too. I was usually home by 10 o'clock. Here it was 12:30, and I wasn't home. And when I did show up at the car, my mom and dad were sitting there beside my car in their vehicle. And I stepped out of the car I was in because I was with somebody else, been drinking Miller Ponies. And little bitty things. I don't remember how many I had, but they tasted like shit. But I drank them anyway, and I was fiddling with the keys trying to get into my car, and my mom rolled her window down and said, when you get home, put your keys, your checkbook, and all your money on the table and wait for us to get there. I pull out of the parking lot, and I get escorted by Oakwood police all the way home. He followed me when I turned in the driveway, hit the blue light, and I said, oh, God. That was a awakening. Anyway, he hit the blue light and said, I just wanted to make sure you got home all right, because your dad's a good friend. So anyway, I sat there and waited for them to come home, and the longer I sat there, the lower my head got. And when they finally did come in, I was patting, laying in the floor. Daddy carried me to the bathroom, let me do my thing, get rid of the alcohol, best way I knew how, which was with the porcelain god. That was my first experience with that. The next morning I wake up like nothing's wrong, and Mama says, you're not going to school today, you're going with us. At 16 years old, my parents put me on probation. Took me down to juvenile and had me put on probation for a year. I didn't touch liquor or beer again until I went into service. That was at 16. I went into service at 17. Supposed to go in October of 81. Anyway, I graduated. I got out of school early, a semester early. I got out of school the 13th of January of 81. I called the recruiting officer and said, hey, I'm supposed to go in October. Get me in as soon as possible because me and Mama are not getting along. 2 weeks later, I was in boot camp down in Orlando. I didn't drink when I first went in. I didn't start drinking until I got transferred up to Great Lakes Naval Base. This was in March of 81. And the drinking was on then because I was drinking 3-2 beers. Hated it, but I just like that feeling of not being numb. I'm being numb, I guess. But anyway, I did that. Got transferred down to Orlando when the drinking got worse. I was in school longer because I was going to nuclear power school for naval submarine service. And when I got in my big trouble there, I was in school 18 hours a day and I was at the bar the other six trying to get a nap in. And I finally got busted when I punched out the command duty officer. Broke his nose. Anyway, I left there and went to Charleston, South Carolina. They transferred me to Charleston, South Carolina, where I got put on a submarine. And went out to sea for 63 days. Didn't know where I was. Came back into port. This will be in April of 82. Came into port. Told the guys that I'm going out partying. Do not bring me back to the base. Y'all can take my car, whatever. Do not bring me back to the base. I had the same thing happen again. I ran into a shore patrol. And first one I ran into was a big black guy. I'm not a racist, but I guess it was the alcohol in me. And I looked at him and I said, you better call for some backup. He's going to need it. And I took off running, and somewhere along the way I fell down, and they took me in, and I ended up breaking somebody's nose that night too. But I ended up getting discharged from the Navy because I refused alcohol treatment. I'm not an alcoholic. I like to drink. That was my philosophy. So anyway, I came home and the party was on until the money started running out. Finally, I had to go back to work. And when I went to work, that was about getting more money to drink on because I'd work and have the beer in the car when I got off work because I still had my military ID. I could buy beer at 18. My friends, because I went in when I was 17, I came home and bought beer for my friends because they weren't old enough, and then they raised the drinking age to 21. I was 18, still had a military ID, which I wasn't supposed to have. But anyway, I got married in December of, 83. I had a son born in 84. No? See, my dates are all messed up. I've had too many drinks, too many head concussions. I mean, I should have wrote this stuff down. Anyway, my first marriage didn't last long. had two wonderful kids through that marriage. And when me and my first wife split up, it was very ugly. That was in, we split up in 89. This part I do remember because I went on a drinking binge, lost a good job I had. I'd been working at SKF in Oakwood for 3 years, and they even offered to get me into alcohol treatment, and I refused, so they finally had to let me go. But I don't have a drinking problem. I like to drink. Life was interfering with my drinking. But anyway, after we split up, like I said, I went on a drinking binge. I ended up with 7 DUIs within a year. I got 3 in 1 week. I don't know how I... Eventually, I got driver's license back. But the last wild ride I took was on St. Patrick's Day of 1991. I went down to Bendon, Gainesville partying. And decided when we came back to the apartment that I wasn't done. The girl I was shacked up with, we weren't together or anything. She was letting me sleep on her, you know, extra room so I could be close to my kids because we all lived in the same apartment complex. Anyway, I decided my car was tore up. Her keys were laying on the counter, so I took her car. I said, Swanee is still open. So I drove down to Swanee in her car, and when I decided to come back, that's when the blue lights turned on. Just as I got on 985, the blue lights came on, and the first thing that popped in my head was, habitual violator, minimum 1 to 5 years, don't let them stop. At that time, 985 was 365, and it ended at exit 7, which is Rabbit Town. I had 10 police cars chasing me up that road. Every time I'd think I was getting close to the exit, they'd block it off. And there towards the end, I was told this part. I pulled over 3 times, and as the cops pulled over with me, they'd leave an opening, and I'd take off again. And at one point, I was in the median doing 120 miles an hour, turning up the bottle of liquor and smoking a cigarette like nothing was going on. I didn't know. I was in a blackout. I don't remember none of it. They finally said when I was running out of 365 was coming to an end, and I knew that. I cut across the median. They said that's when the call came across the radio, take him out, run him off the road. I took out 2 police cars, the car I was in, and if I'd have went another 40 feet, there was a 50-foot drop straight down, and I probably would have ended up getting hurt. Anyway, I crawled out of the car and tried to run through a briar patch. I had on my long trench coat and a black hat just like this one. Anyway, I went to jail and ended up serving, getting sentenced to 20 years, served 8, and then 12 years probation. I actually did 21 months, got out. While I was in prison for that, I was exposed to AA. For the first time, I actually had the chip that I got while I was in prison, the medallion. It's dated May 20th of 92. That was my 1 year celebration in prison. I still carry it in my pocket. After all the years that I went, did all my drinking and everything, when I went into rehab, I found that still in my jewelry box. I don't know how it survived or whatever, but I found it in my jewelry box, so I started carrying it again. Anyway, that happened. I got out, and I stayed sober for a while. After I got out of prison, I did not go to AA meetings. I was living in Buford with my brother and his wife, and my children were there at that time. And then me and my brother had a falling out, and my children ended up going to foster care. So that was a big falling out that me and him had. And for a long time, we did not speak. Even though that was going on, I didn't drink. I would go to the bar on Friday and Saturday night, and I would drink coffee, and I would dance. That is where I met my current wife at. we would dance, and we ended up getting married. We moved in together. I fought to get my kids back. That's the summer of 93. Fought to get my kids back. Got my kids. We moved in together on September 12th of 93, and on March 12th of 94, we got married, and we've been married ever since. And Lord, I don't know how she put up with my shit all these years. And there for a while, I didn't drink. But then I started drinking casually. I got this. I like to drink, but I got it under control. Oh, it kept escalating and escalating. And I'm the type of person that keeps things in. And when I get drunk, that's when they would come out, and it was not pretty. I believe that was one reason my two kids from my first marriage, I believe that is why they decided to go live with their mama out of state to get away from me. I don't know that it's true, but that is a thought that I've had for a long time. My stepkids, who I don't call them, this is the first time I've called them my stepkids in a long time. I consider them all three. I got my two from first marriage, and then I got the three from my second marriage. I got a son, $2 from that from the second marriage, and two from the first marriage. I've also got another daughter that is not mine at all, but I was there when she was born. It was my ex-wife. When the baby was born, I was at the hospital. The real father wasn't. And I tried to be there for her, but I'm not there as much as I needed to be, or even today I'm not there. She had a baby over the weekend, and I wasn't able to go. Because of legal issues. Yes, I'm still fighting legal issues from the turmoil that I got myself into while I was in Florida with that judge. But anyway, life started getting better, and every time it would get better, I would hit the bottle harder. And in 2007, I was doing iron work, doing real good. And they told me, they asked me to go to Tampa, Florida for 2 weeks. And then they were going to send me to a job in Alabama. I said, okay. Well, I went to Tampa, Florida in September of 2007. And I came home from Florida on work-wise in December of 2009. I ended up spending almost 2.5 years down there. The money was good, and I blowed a lot of it drinking. And especially in 2009, it really got bad because if I couldn't drink, I didn't do it. The only time I did not drink was when I was at work. But I had the beer in the truck, or when I did get off work, I had the beer there and I had the liquor. And the guys at work knew I had the beer and the liquor. They were always ready for a safety meeting. That's what I call them. We're going to have a safety meeting after work, guys. I'm supplying. I finally got tired of doing that and started drinking by myself. And there towards the end, when I got in my world of crap down there, I mean, if I couldn't drink, I didn't do it. My wife was back here in Georgia, 700 miles away from me. I had no boss down there to control me. And I thought I liked it, but I was letting the alcohol control me, and actually the gambling was controlling me too. Because I was going to the casino, and as long as you're gambling, your drinks are free. So I was constantly gambling and constantly drinking. And in March of 2009, that's when I got my, I was coming back to the apartment so I could get ready for work at 5 o'clock in the morning. It was on a Wednesday. I had been at the casino. I worked all day, then went to the casino, was there all night, and I was rushing back to the apartment to get ready for work. I remember leaving the casino, and then I remember opening my eyes and seeing the taillights coming towards me. And I locked my truck up and rear-ended the car that was stopped at a red light, and in front of it was a police car. Miami-Dade. Anyway, my thinking was, if you can steer it, clear it. So I'm going to clear off, get mine apart. The road, front end smashed all to pieces. I can't even see over the hood. I pull off on the side road. They charge me with 2 counts of leaving the scene. The cop asked me, said, do you know anything about an accident? I said, yeah, I was just in one. And I'm walking back to it now. I said, there's the truck right there. Oh, well, we're going to charge you with leaving the scene of an accident. I'm 50 feet away from the accident. I got my truck out of the way. Been drinking or not? Yeah, I drank a little bit. How many? Well, 7. Then when they did the breathalyzer, I was 0.25 on 7 drinks. So I thought 7 drinks. I didn't realize how much I drank. But like I said, I was in a blackout until I seen the taillights. So for 2 days, nobody knew where I was. So here I was sitting in the Miami-Dade jail. Well, my wife found out somehow because she was making arrangements to get my happy ass out. I couldn't get in touch with anybody. And when I did get out, I went straight to the bathroom like I was supposed to. And I went back to the apartment and I started drinking again. Went back to work and then all the... Finally, I kept going to court for over a year. Finally, in May of 2010, I was finally sentenced. And that's when the judge told me a year in her jail. And when I get out of jail, a year in rehab. And my attorney and the state attorney both said, we don't need to do both of them. And she said, I've got his driving record from when he started driving at 16. Yes, he does. He's going to do time in my jail. That's the way she put it. You're going to do time in my jail. And you're going to do rehab once you get out of jail. Well, when I got out of jail in February of 2011, due to my stupidity and my bank spending all the money before I went to jail, I came home and me and the wife were living with my in-laws, which I was very grateful for. But I was told right off the beginning, no drinking in my mother-in-law's house. I respected that. So I would drink away from her house. I would walk to the store and get my drinks and think I was hiding it. I wasn't hiding nothing. Finally, probation started coming down on me about getting into rehab, and I kept using the excuse. Oh, I don't have a job. I don't have a steady job. I can't get into rehab. So then they throwed it out. Either you get into rehab or you go back to jail in Florida. We're tired of dealing with you. This was in September. I got out in February. I was supposed to be going to rehab within a month. Here it was September, and I still wasn't in rehab. So finally hooked up with a place in Gainesville, the Agora House, and went and talked to the director. Me and the wife went and talked to the director. I pitched me a drunk that Friday. And I went and reported to rehab on Wednesday, the 14th of September, 2011. And I remember sitting on the couch there in the house because the director took me there, dropped me off, and said, the guys will be here around 5 o'clock. Make yourself at home, and somebody will be here shortly to let you know where to put your stuff. Well, I'm sitting there. I've got a car. I've got a driver's license. And my mind is thinking, what the hell are you doing here? Get your ass in that car and go. I mean, my family didn't know anything about this until I graduated. Yes, I ended up graduating. It wasn't a pretty sight at first. But my mind was thinking when I first went into rehab was, put your stuff in your car and head to North Carolina. My son lives there. He would love to have you. But something wouldn't let me. I just couldn't build up the nerve. And, I've said this at a lot of meetings that I go to. That third tradition, I love it because it's desire to stop drinking is all that's required. When I came in, I didn't have a desire to stop drinking. I had a desire to keep my ass out of jail. I didn't want God in my life. And when you read how it works, you know it says, There's only one who has, there's one who has all power. That one is God. When I read that, I didn't want it. I don't want him in my life. But anyway, I stuck it out. I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to keep an open mind, and I'll be willing to do what they tell me to do. This year I'm in rehab. And when I get out, I'm going back to what I was doing, which was having me a good time, drinking. I even had the party planned. There I was sitting there in rehab and planning a party a year later, planning for a party a year later. Anyway, the first few months in rehab, everything was going good. I was going to meetings. Still wasn't getting into the God thing. So I decided to use the fellowship at the Hall Club. I used the fellowship as my higher power. I would go in there. I would go to the meetings early so I could talk to somebody, no matter who it was. And I met a lot of good people that were willing to listen and often, you know, share their experience with me. And somehow, God got in there. I didn't realize it. I mean, that's that thing that, you know, that's God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I look back now on that judge sentencing me to rehab. That was God doing for me what I could not do for myself. I didn't have a drinking problem. I liked to drink, although it was always in excess. One was too many, and 1,000 was never enough. But anyway, I went through the first 4 months of rehab without any kind of trouble. But I wasn't being honest. You know, that word how, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I was willing to do what they wanted me to do. I was being open-minded about it, but I wasn't being honest. And one day I got busted. I signed out to be meeting with a sponsor, which was a requirement to meet with your sponsor at least once a week in person and call him every day. So I signed out to go meet with my sponsor, and I ended up going to the Waffle House and having lunch by myself. And when I got back, the director was sitting there. How'd it go with your sponsor? Oh, it went great. Well, how come when we called him, he said, Larry who? So I got busted that day. I was assistant house manager, and they busted me all the way back down to transition. I don't know how many people have been in rehab, but at residential rehab anyway. But anyway, that was quite an awakening. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh gosh, what am I going to do now? First thing that popped in my head was, you're going back to jail. You're not been drinking, but you're not following the rules. You're going back to jail. The next day I went to the noon meeting at the Hawk Club, and the man that I was said I was using as a sponsor, I walked up to him because I knew the director had called and talked to him. I walked up to him and I apologized for putting him on the spot. He looked me straight in the eye and said, Larry, if you still want me to be your sponsor, we'll start right now. He said, I will help you make that first step. And from that day on, I was calling him every day. I would see him at every meeting that I went to. Later, I found out, well, I was still struggling with the God thing, and he helped me through that too. And then later, it took me 2 years to find out that he was an atheist. But he had so much influence on me getting right, getting God into my life. That was when I let God into my life. When we did that third step prayer together, I mean, it was like the world had been lifted off my shoulders. Something had been lifted off my shoulders, and I was a happy man again. And I ended up graduating on time, even though I had to basically start the program all over. What usually takes 12 months, like I said, I started the rehab. First 4 months, it was pretty good. Then I got busted back down, and they told me that, well, you won't graduate on time, and you got to be in such a certain phase to graduate, and you just ain't going to make it. And I was doing everything I could, not even thinking about what, you know, wasn't trying to improve myself. I was making sure that the guys coming in had rides to meet him. If they needed help or something, I was just going out of my way. If I wasn't at work, I was deep into the AA, the rehab. And even today, I keep in contact with the director of the Agora House. I keep in touch with the guys coming in and the guys going out. See the people at the meetings. Same guys. When it got time for me to graduate, about a month before I got ready to graduate, or getting close to graduate, the director pulled me to the side at one of our community meetings and said, "Larry, I want you to put in for phase three." I said, "The rules say once you've been busted from phase three, you cannot go back to phase three." He said, "I'm going to revoke that rule for this one time," he said, "because you have went out of your way trying to help all these other guys and keeping your nose straight, and you finally got it, and you're helping these other guys get it." He said, "I want you to put in for phase three." He said, "You just so you can get a 48-hour pass to go home." He said, the only reason he wanted to do that was so I could get a 48-hour pass to go home on a weekend before I got released. Or graduated from, not released, but graduated from rehab. And so I put in for it, and of course, all the other house managers approved it, and with his backing. And when I got close to getting out of rehab, I started getting scared. Because I was thinking, all this time you've been planning on going back to what you were doing. Now, it's coming up. What are you going to do? I started hitting more meetings. I started calling my sponsor more. I started sharing more with the guys at the houses. I started getting more into rehab. I was afraid to leave rehab. Because, believe it or not, I needed that structured environment to stay sober. And I didn't realize it. Again, that was God doing for me what I could not do for myself. One thing I forgot to mention was, right before I got busted, I went home on a Christmas pass. My son had come in from North Carolina. It was on a Sunday, and we had to be back at 10 o'clock that night. If we were 10:01, we were busted and we were in trouble. Well, at 5 o'clock that afternoon, Christmas Day, I'd been trying to get in touch with my brother for 4 days and hadn't gotten no word from him. So I asked my son, I said, "How about riding with me? Go over here and check on Jeff." We got over there and I got my brother's landlord to let us in, and I found my brother dead. We still don't know the actual facts of the matter. All we know is that he was dead in the floor of his trailer and had a generator running inside. And earlier that week, I had called him and asked him if he needed money or anything, because I was working, making good, doing a lot of work, and asked him if he needed anything for his boys or anything for Christmas. He said, "No, I got this, Larry." And anyway, when I found him dead, the first person I called was my director at the rehab. Then I called my wife. And then I called my sponsor, because I was looking for something to drink, because I knew my brother had stuff to drink. My brother, I had three at that time. He was my youngest brother. I'd already had two brothers die of alcoholism, active alcoholism. And I know my younger brother, the last time I actually didn't talk to him, it was on a Thursday, he texted me. And I knew when he texted me, he was drunk. And when I tried to text him back, I couldn't get no response after that. So I figured he was pitching another drunk. And again, while I was waiting on somebody else to show up, I was searching the cabinets. I was looking for something to drink. I found all kind of empty bottles, empty cans. There was nothing in the refrigerator, thank God. Again, that was God doing for me what I could not do for myself. That was an awakening. And then, like I said, that happened Christmas Day, 2011. I got busted in February of 2012. And in March of 2012, I lost my grandfather. I was at an AA meeting when I got the phone call. It was a noon meeting. I was fixing to be a discussion leader because people could tell there was something bothering me. And I was going to get it off my chest about my grandfather being in the hospital and the director not letting me go see his ass at the hospital. And right before I was able to share anything, the phone rang at the Hawk Club. And the gentleman answered the phone. He said, "Larry, I think you need to take this phone call." And when I took the phone call, I dropped to my knees, and somebody had to help me out the door so I could get my composure back. And it was my wife telling me that my grandfather had died. Again, luckily, I was in rehab. I got my composure back, went back inside to the meeting. The discussion had started underway, and when I came back in, all eyes were on me. And the chairperson said, "Larry, I think you need to share, don't you?" I said, "Yes, sir, I do." So I did, and I went back to the after the meeting. Had a lot of friends, people showing me, you know, the support and everything. And I went back to the office of the rehab and told them what was going on. And luckily, they decided to let me hang out there at the office because they didn't want that. They knew they couldn't. Well, I told them, I said, "I can't be trusted to leave here because I'm going to go do something stupid. Probably pick up a bottle on the way." So I didn't go to work that day. And anyway, that was the two things that happened while I was in rehab, the major things. But luckily, God was there for me where I didn't have to take those drinks. And when I graduated in September of 2012, I had my whole family there, all the kids, grandkids. And at that time, I was thinking, we're going to have a party tonight. And I was sharing that a little bit at the when the director was telling, you know, sort of filling everybody in, because we had new guys coming in, and even had people that had graduated came back from my graduation, because I didn't think it would happen. But they were showing their support. Anyway, I got out of rehab and kept going to my meetings. And to this day, I haven't had that desire to take a drink. If I, every once in a while, you know, that thought will come in, "Oh, you got this, you can have one." And I'm thinking, "No, you can't. Larry, you're an alcoholic. You're a pickle. You can never be a cucumber again." I like cucumbers. I like pickles. I guess I'll just be pickled the rest of my life. But, you know, 5 years ago, I never would have thought I'd be up sharing my story at an AA meeting. That was the last thing from my mind 5 years ago. Even 4 years ago, when I got out of rehab, I didn't think I'd make it 5 years. But sometimes I just have to take it one day at a time. And there have been a few times that I've had to break it down to an hour at a time. If I get off on one of them lonely spots by myself and I'm thinking, there's a store. I've got, you know, I don't even go to the coolers anymore. If I go in and they don't have coffee, I turn around and walk out. I very seldom buy sodas, or I definitely don't buy no. I very seldom buy cold drinks. But at the store, if I frequent a store and they don't have coffee when I come in, I don't go back to that store anymore. There's a lot of stores that don't make coffee after noon. That ain't no good, unless it's that cold outside. But the beer is always there, but that don't bother me. And therefore, you know, when I first got out of rehab, the kids, I know some of the kids like to drink. I'm glad they can. I can't. I can't drink moderately because I'm a teetotaler. I'm going to do it all. I'm going to drink till there ain't nothing left. And then I'm going to jump in the car and go get some more if I got money. But I don't have to worry about that now. When the kids were a little hesitant about inviting me over to their cookouts and stuff, I could understand why. They didn't want a lot of them, most of them said, "Well, Daddy's, we can't be drinking around Daddy, and we like to drink, so we're not going to." Well, we won't invite him, but we know he won't stay long. And I always told myself, if I start feeling uneasy, it ain't that I want to leave, but if I feel uneasy, I know how to leave. He's an ex-son-in-law now. My daughter over here, she knows what I'm talking about. I love you, Indy. Every time I went over to his house, I lived with him for a while too. And our routine was best on Fridays and Saturday nights. Build a big bonfire and drink until we couldn't drink anymore or until it ran out. And you'd get with a half a gallon of Crown. When it was gone, then we'd crawl our happy asses into beds because we didn't have no more. And our wives were in beds, and we didn't want to take a chance on going nowhere. There wasn't nothing open at 3 o'clock in the morning, no way. But the last time that I went over there to their house, it was on supposed to be a birthday for the kids, and it turned into a drinking party for the adults. It wasn't my daughter's fault. It was sort of his fault. But he wanted me to go, he invited us to go with him to the pool and stuff, and I said, no, I started feeling uneasy. I said, I just got to go. And I didn't ever tell my daughter that, unfortunately. It wasn't her, it was him. But I felt uneasy now. I know it hurt their feelings when I had to leave, especially the grandkids. But there are times when today, even today, if I start feeling uneasy, I have to walk away. I know how to walk away. This program, I can be open with my family. I couldn't do that before. I can be honest and open with my family now. And they like it when I do be honest and open with them and talk. There for a long time I didn't talk. Unless I was drunk, then they didn't want to hear what I had to say. But now, my life has turned around. I know where the vehicles are parked. I still have a driver's license, even though the judge in Florida permanently revoked the driver's license. The state of Georgia said she can't do that. You may not be able to get a driver's license in Florida. I said, I got no inkling to go back to Florida. I don't even want to go down there for a visit. I had enough of Florida. But I know where the vehicles are. I know where the motorcycle is. Now when I have problems, I know how to, with this program helped me open up and get back in contact with my wife and the kids. Teaching me how to live life on life's terms instead of on my terms, which back in the day, my terms were, if I couldn't handle it, drop, it ain't going to get handled. I always put things on the back burner and let them pile up. Now I try not to put them on the back burner. Try to handle them as they come, because if I let them build up and build up, somebody's going to pop, and it's probably going to be me, and it won't be nice, and it probably won't be because I went back to drinking. Probably because I did something stupid before I talked to somebody. But not only has the problem kept me away from alcohol, it has opened me up, taught me how to get back in touch with myself and be in touch with my family. I don't know if this story is going to help anybody or not. I'm glad I was able to do it. Glad I could be here. Thank y'all.
Thank you, Larry. I got to meet your family before we got started tonight, and I said, I guess you guys are pretty proud of Larry. They said, it's really a miracle. It's really a miracle.
Carry on.